Oh, hello. I was just running across town. Yeah, when you have a conference in your own city. Anyway, glad to be here. Tenestelin. Habeshwa chalu? Ande? Bulat? Sost? Okay. It's interesting to be presenting today, October 31st, which the UN has officially announced that the 7 billionth person or child will be come into the world. On the front page of the Washington Post, you see it talks about aging. Well, that's fine globally, but in terms of countries like Ethiopia, it's not aging yet, but it will be aging. So, but right now we're looking at a very young population. If you read the fine line of the article on the front page of the Post, it does also talk about migration, but particularly international migration. But before international migration happened, there's a lot of internal migration, and we're going to be talking about that today. So I'm presenting this with one colleague with whom I've been working with for over 20 years, Dr. Asaba Hali Mariam, which is really the Dean of Demographers in Ethiopia, and a young, recent graduate student, Fitzum Sodhu. Asaba and I teach at the university, and Fitzum is at the Ethiopian Economic Association. No relationships to disclose. The research was funded in part by Packard Foundation, but a lot of university resources went into it. So while in the presentation here, the RH fertility is number four, we're going to work into it by looking first at the migration and then looking at the conclusions here. I'm not going to bore you with too much data. I see we're limited in time, but one of our pet peeves, not only in Ethiopia, but in many countries, particularly African countries, is the data on migration is becoming scarcer. The UN has often dropped the question on place of birth and or place of upbringing. They're just asking, where were you 5 years ago? So we have to do our own surveys. Ethiopia, some of you know, is highly rural. It's got up to very recently 3% population growth rate annually, and there's population pressure now in rural areas. In terms of the NDGs, it hasn't been doing actually that bad in the health-related NDGs, but they're number four. They still are lagging a little behind with the recent DHS coming out at 4.8. The target is 4.0 for 2015, and the family planning target is 44, and it's now way up to 28. So in terms of looking at trends, at least the health-related trends in the MDGs are actually doing quite well, except for maternal health. A big issue has been the very early age of marriage, and that has been impacting a lot on reproductive health and also the very high malnutrition in the country. Of course, we are researchers too, but you can't just do research in Ethiopia. It has to be policy-oriented, particularly if you're in Addis Ababa University, government university, so they depend on us a lot. Of course, we're able to criticize or critique policy, which is nice when you're inside the government. When you're outside, it's not that easy. But we are trying to, we've been studying the population policy, and the first objective that I state here is the attempt at least 20 years ago to reduce rural-urban migration. Well, all our migration research in this past 20 years has shown, in fact, the opposite, that that's unfortunate, and there's a lot of benefits to migration, different migration patterns, but there are also risks. And so we're going to talk about the balance of the risks and benefits. There's also a lot of climate change going on and climate variation. There are three different patterns in the country. So we're looking at the role of migration and climate change adaptation, which is also a big UN focus. The objectives here were twofold. One was to look at the impact of the youth that are leaving on their ascending communities and their ascending households, and then to look at the impact on themselves and also in delaying the transition to marriage. So I don't have the zapper, but you can see the two lines coming in where we did this first round of survey. The darkest part is high population density, and so we studied the northwest there. This is Gojam in Amhara region, and then in the south center, that's Wolaita. And if you know those two regions, you know that there's not much opportunities for youth to live off land, so they are of necessity moving around. Here are the research questions, and number three is really important, looking at both the costs as well as the benefits to both the sending communities, because these are youth and often they're sent, as well as to the youth themselves, and then how does it influence fertility and family planning use. And what's really important is the institution of marriage, the culture, the kinship in marriage, and how those norms are changing. So there were two, in terms of the methods, there were two aspects to this. We did the usual quantitative survey, and initially we did it in Addis Ababa to see where the majority of youth were coming from, which rural areas, and it was Gojam in the northwest and Wolaita in the south center were the two main ascending area to Addis Ababa. So we went to those rural areas, and then we did a mixed methods of both survey and the qualitative. In the qualitative, we went to the focal rural area, and then we looked at the adjacent, what's called Azuria, around the regional capital, which is a kind of a semi-urban ring to compare the rural with an area where a lot of youth are going to these suburban rings around the cities. The qualitative methodology was important because, in fact, we only had, from the last 20 years, mainly we had quantitative data. But in terms of looking at decision-making processes, both in terms of migration and in terms of transitions to adulthood and delaying the transitions, and looking at social and cultural change, while Ethiopia is perceived as a very traditional society, if you've lived there for the past 20 years, as I have, or off and on, you realize that what's happening now, our students now are quite different from our students 20 years ago, and you have to realize this is not a static society, and the youth are taking things into their own hands, and maybe the Arab Spring will eventually come south to sub-Saharan Africa. So we did focus groups on the qualitative, both with boys 15 to 19, and then girls 13 to 17 and 15 to 19. But we also did key informants because it's important to get a historical perspective. There have been different regimes in Ethiopia. There's an imperial regime, Haile Selassie, till the mid-70s, and then the communist military regime, the Derg, till the early 90s, and now a mixed ideology regime presently. These are the topics. There's a lot of topics. This is a complicated field when you're dealing with youth and their life courses. So in the quantitative, okay, I get the word. I better not go into depth in the methodology. So here's a view of the girls. Oh, these are in Gojam. You can see they're white with their head shaved, white or green. And these are the boys, too, somewhat older, and you know the Gojang boys wear shorts, not long pants. There are limitations. Usually when you do research in Ethiopia, there are quite a number of limitations to moving around and time constraints. Here's a model, a decision-making model, and you can see both on the left-hand side and the right-hand side, the push and pull factors are many, are multiple. So we have to study that. So let's get into the findings. You can kind of read the main conclusion to each of these slides. Migration seems to be contextual. It's somewhat hard to generalize. The red being from the south and the blue being from the north, where the Nile is. And so you can see a higher percentage leaving from Malaita than going to Gojang. There are many social determinants, social economic factors affecting the migration status of the household. Some that we had hypothesized, though, were not statistically significant. Others were. We thought that the traditional wealth indicators like livestock and land would be significant, but they weren't. But what was more significant in determining whether a household had an out-migrant was the age of the head of household, the literacy, the proximity to whatever capital, and whether they were from the highlands, the Dega versus the Wayna Dega. One thing that didn't surprise us, but it surprised the policymakers, is that the households of permanent migrants were quite a bit better off. You can see in the far right-hand column that the migrant households were disproportionately from the better off households, but also the heads of households were older. The patterns of rural-urban migration, there were four, but the rural-urban patterns predominated both in West Gojang and in Walaita. And these are some of the factors related to the determinants of descending households. You can see over 50% of the households from other migrant households had older heads. I won't go into these patterns, but the Amhara kids were less likely to go directly to the capital city, Asaba, where the southern kids didn't have much in between and went directly to the capital. This is very important. Secondary education was greatly increased after the out-migration. And we know now it's secondary education that really makes a difference in terms of fertility and family planning. Also, in terms of context, and one of my pet peeves is that we tend to generalize by Africa or generalize by Ethiopia, but look how different one region is, the south from the north. And the reasons for migration in the south in Walaita are often work-related, but the reasons from the north and Gojang are often study-related, as much for girls as for boys, which is really encouraging. These are some of the age-specific fertility patterns. Now on to fertility. And fertility is somewhat higher in migrant households than in non-migrant households. But the age at first birth is later among the migrant household women and also in Walaita. CPR, contraceptive use, which is fairly low in among parity 1 and 2, really rises for ages 25 to 34, and you can see how much higher it is in those age groups. We found also that current family planning use was higher among the out-migrant households, specifically in Gojang. But again, Walaita was somewhat different. These are some of the odds ratios, and you see on the left that education, and particularly secondary school education, was one of the significant factors affecting contraceptive use. But wealth and landholding was not. An important predictor for the future fertility is desired additional children, and what you can see in the red that once they reach five, 78% want no more children, but most of the women still want at least four for children. There is high unmet need for family planning. It is going down, and it's somewhat higher in among the blue Gojam households than Wellita. So the general conclusion, sorry I'm rushing so fast here. Okay, I got 1 minute, wow. So migration is an important livelihood and resource allocation strategy. It's very complex. And a larger proportion of female-headed households are found in migrant-sending households. The bivariate analysis is somewhat different from the multivariate, and it is also contextual. We did find higher fertility in the sending households, the migrant sending households, 4.2, versus the non-sending, and also a desire for additional children, but we haven't made the connection there yet. There was, again, higher use of family planning among the migrant household women than the non. The zonal differences are really important, so when you come to Ethiopia, please don't generalize about it. So the north is quite different than the south. There's also a major famine in the east, which is also quite different. But importantly is to add on the qualitative finding and look at the decision making. We found that we find little influence of out migration on the fertility. That is, when the kids are sent out or leave themselves, the parents don't try to make up for it and have additional children, which had been thought to be true by the policy makers, and that's why they didn't want the kids to leave, because they thought it would be pronatalist, but it didn't happen. So we have policy implications that are probably only interesting to policymakers there. But the second one here is really to expand access to migrant youth-friendly reproductive health services. There is a strategy on reproductive health services, but it's not for migrant kids, but a lot of the kids are circulating. So obviously we need more research. We need to expand this to the national level if we're going to influence a policy. And number two, we need to reduce the dropout rates in middle and upper school. Because that will minimize the higher risk kids who are leaving to the cities. And I said we want to expand it nationally, we want to involve the regional universities, and most importantly, we want to change the national strategy of limiting rural urban migration because we think it'll help to help to meet the TFR strategy of 4.0, 2015, and CPR of 44%. A lot of people were involved, not only Packard and the EEA and at the university, but also our qualitative researchers who were our graduate students, Yordanis, Deshome, Meheret, and Abovich, who also speak this local language and know the culture and religion. Is she?